The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Good morning, Chris. Great show as always.
You really are special. I love the way you and Eddie team, but you really are a gem, Chris. You've got clarity in a very mucky room.
Hello, Chris. You are a national treasure with the perspective you bring to us.
The 20th Amendment to the Constitution. The chair declares the second session of the 117th Congress adjourned. Sinai Dai.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Disarray! Disarray! Oh, whatever will we do? Can the country function? Ladies and gentlemen, disarray! Oh! Why, I could barely sleep last night in that I slept completely fine. Do you feel like a nation in disarray because we don't have a Speaker of the House this morning, ladies and gentlemen? I suspect you don't. In fact, I bet the vast majority of you listening have jobs to do today. The vast majority of you have children to raise today, families to think of, employees and professional responsibilities to tend to, bills to pay, groceries to buy, expensive gas to put in your tank. I expect there's a whole lot of things on your mind today. I bet there are many stresses and worries in your life today. And if there are not, God bless you. I bet there's lots on your mind and lots on your heart today. I bet you wake up thinking about a lot of things every day. And you know what I'll bet? I'll bet not one of them is who's the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. I'll bet it's not even on your top 10 list of things you thought about today when you woke. If you have, in fact, 10 things you think about in the course of a day when you wake. I mean, you're here listening, so naturally now I've put it on your mind, but if you were just left to your own devices, and you opened your eyes and you didn't turn on cable news, and you didn't look at your phone, I'm serious, who's the next Speaker of the House going to be anywhere close to the top of your mind as a concern this morning? I'll bet not. And if so, I'd love to hear from you because you must have the most buttoned up, put together, stress-free life of any human being on planet Earth. You must be independently wealthy and bored out of your mind. And good for you, by the way. God bless you if that's true. But for the rest of humanity, nobody's talking about Kevin McCarthy in their minds or in mixed company today. But, oh boy, if you turn on cable news this morning, it is wall-to-wall disarray. The GOP is in disarray. Even Fox News is just so upset with people in the Republican ranks who will, these 20 insurrectionists, why, this is worse than January 6th. This is damn near Pearl Harbor stuff. Whatever are we going to do? This, and if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times yesterday. This hasn't happened in 100 years. Yes, but it has happened. And 100 years ago when it happened, it took 2 months. 2 whole months. And believe it or not, that was before there was a curvy couch on Fox and Friends. That was before there was Brett Baer and Special Report and talking head pundits in squares on television. 100 years ago, elected representatives of the people who make up the House of Representatives took 2 months to decide who they wanted as their next speaker. And there was no Don Lemon. There was no Rachel Maddow. Nobody'd heard of National Review because there wasn't such a thing. Once upon a time, the country just governed, and individuals who were voted by the people that sent them to Washington, D.C., and were there to do the bidding of the, in theory, ostensibly the elected representatives were there to do the bidding of the people that sent them to Washington, D.C., they had healthy disagreement about who should lead the way forward, even then. Why, there have been historic fights about who should lead Congress since its inception, all the way back to the late 1700s. You will find there is historical precedent for party dissension if you do any cursory historical overviews of American government and history. It doesn't take much digging. I mean, Morning Joe has Michael Beschloss on today. Maybe they're having that conversation now. Michael! And I'm sure Beschloss, being the completely studious and nonpartisan historian he is, I'm sure he will bring clarity and calm to the discussion and point out to Joe and Mika that, no, in fact, this has precedent. Parties disagree all the time with who should lead the way forward. This is not end of the world stuff, Joe and Mika. No big deal. I'm a historian. Presidents have been assassinated, God forbid. We'll get through a couple of days without Kevin McCarthy. It's okay, everybody, is what a responsible presidential historian would say. But he's a partisan hack, so I'm sure he's in the process as we speak. I'm sure he's probably telling them how he's never seen anything quite like this. What an extraordinary moment in history. Because remember, in 2023, everybody that lives through something now, it's the worst that it's ever been. We now no longer have, these people who call themselves historians, they're total shams because they offer no context. They make the view, they confirm the hysterics of the broadcast every time by saying things like, oh, no, we've never seen anything quite like this. It's really extraordinary. No, it's not. Instability in leadership and dissension amongst political parties is commonplace as just about anything you've ever seen in American governmental history. So I'm not I tried to make this clear yesterday, but let me be even more blunt today. I don't care if we never seat a Speaker of the House. I honest to God, do not care. And I mean this, I swear to the Lord himself, I don't care if there's never a Speaker of the House seated. I don't care if the next 2 years until there's another president, there's nothing but vote after vote after vote for 2 years. And this House of Representatives does nothing. Do you hear me? I don't care. Because you see, the misperception by people on cable news and by so many in the wizards of smart and punditocracy land out there is that you and I are eagerly awaiting their activity. We just wake every day like they do, watching and waiting and hoping Washington does something. And if they're not doing something, why, we little Americans out here just don't know how to function. We just can't do anything without Congress doing stuff. Whatever are we going to talk about? However will we run our lives? These people are, to put it mildly, completely, as a body, unimpressive. Now, there are some very unimpressive people, very impressive people in their midst, but as a body, particularly the Republican Party, they're an unimpressive bunch. And conservatives, I'll speak for myself here, don't trust them as a collective to get anything done. And so there are 20 people, 20, that grew by one, interestingly, yesterday. So they've had three votes now to try to get Kevin over the finish line, and 19 holdouts on two different ballots said, no, we want somebody else. Then the third time around, a 20th guy jumped on. So it grew. That's not good news for California Kevin. And I keep hearing, one of the 20, by the way, is going to be on the show here today. And tomorrow, one of the guys that many of these 20 think would be better suited to lead, Andy Biggs is his name. He's the Arizona congressman who has been volleyed as one of the names, along with Jim Jordan as another. There was an interesting thing yesterday. It was kind of funny. Jim Jordan and I got to be careful. I keep calling Kevin McCarthy Andy McCarthy. Not to be confused. They're different men entirely. Andy's our great friend from National Review and a constitutional attorney. Kevin McCarthy is the California congressman. So I forgive me if I do that, but you'll know why. I've got two McCarthys in my head. So Kevin McCarthy runs over to Jim Jordan yesterday, and they have a little conference on the House floor after the first vote goes south. And Jordan is sketching notes at the podium. And Elise Stefanik, the lieutenant there behind McCarthy, is looking over the shoulder, and they're conferencing. And so the next thing you know, Jordan stands up and gives this impassioned 3-minute floor speech about the fight we need and what we've pledged to the American people we're going to get done. And the man we need to do it is Kevin McCarthy, everybody. Harumph, 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 says everybody behind him. And then Matt Gaetz. So that's Jordan, right? I found this, folks, I thought this was wildly entertaining. I mean, as a political geek and a news junkie, I watched this yesterday. I was popping the corn. It's like a poor man's house of cards. I find it all very fascinating and entertaining, and I don't mind it. Let them sort this out. Again, let me say, if this goes on for 2 years, I don't care. Because here's what it presumes. Well, let me finish my story first. Jordan finishes this speech, and then Matt Gaetz comes down to the podium. I think we have, well, no, this is Gaetz earlier. I'll get to that, too. Gaetz comes down, and he says, you know, I really appreciate what Jim Jordan just said. And I agree with everything he just said. And Jim Jordan's a fine man, which is why I nominate Jim Jordan to be the next speaker. So Jordan has just done some horse trading with McCarthy and said, that's why I heartily endorse Kevin McCarthy. And then Gaetz comes down and goes, Jim, I really appreciate everything you just said. That's why you should be the next speaker. And so 20 people threw their votes behind Jim Jordan. And Jordan was like, I don't want it. I just said I want Kevin. Look, I don't know, and I don't care. You know, I talked with a new member of Congress, a friend of mine from Missouri yesterday, who feels that he owes Kevin McCarthy a lot for his House victory in a new district and a new seat for him. And a lot of money and energy was poured into helping him through a primary. And there's a loyalty factor there. And so this new freshman member of Congress has gone to Washington, D.C., and his very first bit of business is to decide where his loyalties lie. Now, imagine how uncomfortable that is. You know, it is fair and it is true that the only small sliver of light in the midterms 2022 was the Republicans eking out the tiniest little victory to control the House. And it is true that Kevin McCarthy did a lot of heavy lifting on that. And he barnstormed the country and he poured resources and, you know, he picked favorites and, you know, he anointed certain people in primary races, particularly contested primaries. So, like, what do you do? This is a great kind of, I didn't put my friend on the spot in asking him this because every man and woman has got to make their own decision. You got to sleep at night and live with yourself. Okay, but I want you to imagine for a second. Fast Eddie, this is a good test. You're running in a hotly contested primary in your home district, in your home state. 6-7 people running against you for the Republican nomination. And old California Kevin, who is the ranking Republican in Congress, you've lobbied him. Several of the other opponents of yours have lobbied him. And then he ultimately decides, you know what? I'm going to throw my energies and time fundraising efforts behind you, Fast Eddie. I think you're my man. Now, when you're in a primary in your home state, that matters a lot. That resource, that time, that help, that energy matters a lot to you, doesn't it? Because you're trying to win a 6-7-way primary.
Of course it does. Yes.
So then you go on, you get that nomination, and you win. And now you are the congressman-elect from your home district in your home state. And you've got to go, the first thing you've got to do is cast your first vote. The very first thing you do before you even become a sworn-in member of the House of Representatives is you've got to vote for the next Speaker of the House. Well, what do you do? Do you listen to blowhard talk show hosts like me? Do you listen to some of your constituents who say, I don't trust that Kevin McCarthy. I think he's been around too long. I think he's establishment politics. I think we need a new way. Or are you mindful of the fact that California Kevin had a lot to do with helping you get to where you are, and you can't very well do the work of being a conservative new member of the House without Kevin's help? And if Kevin, in fact, is successful and becomes the next Speaker of the House, what do? You flip him the bird, and then all of a sudden you're on the outs with the new boss once he becomes Speaker. That's pretty tricky for a new kid in Congress, isn't it?
It is. Is there an option or time to hold a town hall with your constituents that want to show up to gain their input, or are they trusting you to make that decision?
Well, that's the next question. Like, at what point do you then just say, hey, look, you hired me. Now I got to do the work. Like, I appreciate your trust in me. And now you're going to have to trust me that I cast the votes that I think are in your best interests. And the first thing I'm going to do is support California Kevin.
Okay.
I mean, that's what my friend's staring down the barrel of, you know. He says, look, we've got business to tend to. This guy knows the halls of power. You know, he's going to be our shepherd through this thing. I trust him. I'm with him. And I know some of you aren't, but believe you me, I'm going to work hard to keep it honest. And, you know, that's how I'm voting. So that's, you know, this friend of mine, that was his unenviable job yesterday, was to continue to stand resolute. His first day in this new position, stand resolute. Many of his constituents are looking at him with the skunk eye going, what the hell are you? What, Kevin McCarthy? That's the first thing you do is stand tall with Kevin. But look, there are also another group of Republicans, a healthy group of Republicans, that think these 20 people, like Scott Perry, who's going to be on the show today, have no plan, keep moving the goalposts. They're just throwing food. They're just being malcontents with no objective, no outcome. They're just show horses. They're not achieving anything. Why, Fast Eddie, we're just in disarray for no reason at all. And this is supposed to upset you. And we're told that this is supposed to make me mad at people like Scott Perry. I'm supposed to be mad at Matt Gaetz. Here's what Gaetz said in a press conference before the first vote was cast yesterday, by the way. Kind of interesting.
But we were threatened by my committee chairman to be on the Armed Services Committee, Mr. Rogers, that if we did not vote for Mr. McCarthy, we would be removed from committees. Our position is that if Kevin McCarthy is the Speaker of the House and we don't have an ability to ensure that there is oomph behind the agenda and energy behind our oversight, that the committee assignments don't mean that much anyway. I'm not here to participate in some puppet show where we pass a bunch of messaging bills, send them to the Senate, watch them die, fail to use leverage, and don't hold the Biden administration accountable. I don't want to relive the Benghazi experience where it's just theater pretending to be oversight, right? We can do better than that, and that's our purpose today.
He's exactly right. Who disagrees with what that man just said? I sure as hell don't. Do you have the confidence that Kevin McCarthy is going to shepherd in and usher in a new era where this Republican-led Congress on the House side is going to go, forgive the phrase, balls to the wall and really do the work to dig, investigate, hold accountable agencies like the IRS and the FBI and the Biden administration? Do you believe that Kevin McCarthy has the teeth and the brass to do it, the commitment and the conviction to do it? Do you believe it? And the answer, I would bet, if you polled most people who are highly engaged like you are, I bet most of you would say, not really, no. But all the wizards of smart say it's Kevin's time. And because Kevin's been around and Kevin has high name ID and Kevin is omnipresent in politics and he's on TV a lot and we're familiar with him and the news people are he's accessible to them. They have a relationship with him. They have a great relationship with his guest booker. So when I want to get Kevin on the show, why, we have a direct pipeline to the people who get, you know, who are in communication with Kevin. So Kevin's, anytime I need him, how exciting it would be. Can I give you a little inside skinny? Because that's what's going on here with a lot of people you watch who are telling you, this is untenable. This can't stand. Republicans are in disarray. You want to know the dirty little secret? I suppose I'd be saying that too if I thought it was to this show's advantage, to be completely candid with you, if I thought it was to this show's advantage that the next Speaker of the House was Kevin McCarthy, you'd probably find me more reserved on the subject. I won't say I would be just blindly sycophantic, you know, boot-licking, cheering Kevin McCarthy. You probably would hear me say nothing. And I'll tell you why. If I had a relationship with Kevin McCarthy, personally, if I knew him, if he was on the show regularly, as like the minority, you know, like if Eddie was regularly reaching out to Kevin McCarthy's office, and Kevin McCarthy was regularly coming onto the show and offering us commentary and insights into the inner workings of the upper echelon of the Republican Party, and, you know, he's just been to the White House. Like, that's cool for our show. That's good for us. It's good for this audience. It's good perspective. We like that access. And best of all, it's easy. We've got a bat phone, a direct line to the most powerful guy in the Republican Party. That's pretty cool. And a lot of these shows have that. And Kevin McCarthy's fostered that. And it's been around. That's the way this Beltway media stuff works, folks. And so guess what? Now that's threatened. After all this time and all these years of this very cozy, easy relationship where we pick up the bat phone and we can get the guy who runs the Republican Party in the House on the phone and get him on camera, get him on our show. Now all of a sudden we got to deal with Chip Roy from Texas. Who the hell's that guy? Now we got to deal with Matt Gaetz. Now we got to deal with Scott Perry from Pennsylvania. Not only do they not like them and they don't like their politics, they don't have a great relationship with them. But you see, Kevin's comfortable. It's Kevin's turn. Kevin's been around. We all know Kevin. And imagine, we'd be great friends with the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. And isn't that cool? Say, so many of the people that you watch and listen to behind the scenes that aren't being honest with you and forthright with you as to why they sound so indignant that this just doesn't go Kevin McCarthy's way. Why is this a fight? Why is this a discussion, they say? This is unprecedented. We've never heard of this sort of thing. Yes, we have. It's not unprecedented. As Chip Roy explains yesterday, take a listen.
So this is what the chamber looks like when we're actually debating and the bodies are in the chairs. How many times have we been down here giving speeches and there's not a soul in the chamber? Yet this is what it takes to get 435 people in the chamber and have an actual debate. The American people are watching, and that's a good thing. What we're doing is exercising our rights to vote and have a debate and have a discussion about the future of this country through the decision of choosing a speaker. This is not personal. It's not. This is about the future of the country. This is about the direction of the country. American people who are looking at this body and wondering why we can pass $1.7 trillion bills that are unpaid for. They can just slide in $45 billion for Ukraine, but not pay for it. $40 billion for emergency spending and not pay for it. 10% increase in defense spending, 6% increase in non-defense spending and not pay for it. And not do a thing except put language in a bill that prohibits our ability to use the money to secure the border. That bill gets rammed through, and we know exactly how it gets rammed through, because the defense world and the non-defense world come together and say, you know what? We're going to cut a deal, and we'll all go to the mics, and we'll all go give speeches, and the American people are the big losers. That's what happens. We know that's what happens. The Rules Committee sits up there and passes a bill, sends it to the floor, and we have no debate on the floor of this body. We haven't been able to offer an amendment on the floor of this body since May of 2016. The former leader and I have discussed this right here. That's true. But the fact is, this place has to change. It has to change.
Who disagrees with it? Nobody disagrees with that. Who's sane in the Republican ranks disagrees with that? Who are you? Who the hell is the Republican voter who says, that Chip Roy sounds unreasonable? Who are you? Who would dare reach out to this show and say, that guy's an insurrectionist. He's just a kook. It's time for Kevin McCarthy. Who's the voter? Oh, I know you'll find lots of blow-dried, you know, multi-million-dollar hairdo guys on cable news tell you why it makes no sense. But you and I know what Chip Roy just said makes total sense. Here's Scott Perry yesterday, who will be on the show today.
The American people don't care who the speaker is. The American people care that they're paying $5 for a dozen eggs. They care that they can't afford their energy bills. They care about a wide open border and rampant crime in their communities. They don't care about this. So how are we going to fix this if we keep doing the same things and getting the same outcomes?
And that's just it. Republican voters do not believe at this point, and look, whether you say it's fair or whether you say it's right or whether you say these 20 people don't have an alternative or whatever, you can complain and bitch about these 20 people all you'd like. But Kevin McCarthy and the GOP writ large have the problem, and it's a credibility problem with their own voters. This is not these 20 people's fault. This is the fault of a GOP that has failed its constituents, the people who sent them to Washington to do the work. You just heard Chip Roy say it. They haven't been able to publicly debate anything since 2016. Now, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they haven't been in charge. But what Chip Roy is saying, where's the fight been? We're going to change the rule. We don't like this. You heard Gates say it. We want teeth. We're tired of the Benghazi stuff. We're tired of the show trials. Where's the meat? I mean, if I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times. We want investigations. We want to get to the bottom of this Hunter Biden laptop. We want to get to the bottom of Biden's dirty dealings. We want to get to the bottom of the FBI. We want to get to the bottom of this. We want to get to the bottom of that. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times from you. And I agree. Question is, do you think Kevin McCarthy's gonna? And the answer that I hear is a resounding no from most people. They don't. They think this is going to be business as usual. I mean, this Twitter files thing yesterday, I'm going to get into it next. It plays right into the hands of this storyline of these 20 that say Kevin's not the guy for the job. Because you have to start to wonder, how serious are they? Given what we know about an extraordinarily aggressive and dirty FBI that is now pressuring, and we have evidence that they're pressuring private entities to shut down certain political voices and speech. Makes one wonder, how corruptible are leaders inside the Republican Party? How intimidated are leaders inside Republican ranks? You have to ask the question, don't you? We know they're in bed with Democrats. Are they intimidated? Are Republicans intimidated? Maybe. I think it's time to ask the question. So, I restate what I said yesterday. This silliness that you're watching all over cable news today, that this is, chaos. Let the Democrats have their... And by the way, one more thing. Please do not tell me. The reason we have to have a speaker is because Democrats are going to make fun of us. Shut up. I don't care what the Democrats have to say about any of this. Do CNN and MSNBC delight in this story? Of course they do. Who cares? Well, the Democrats aren't going to think we're serious. Folks, do you think that anything the Republicans do, let's say they really put together a ship-shaped prosecution of the Biden administration in their newly governed House, do you think the Democrats are going to go, I'm really impressed with the way they were buttoned up. They had their facts and their stats and everything put together. Well done. Boy, I've changed my mind. That Biden bunch is really corrupt. I see it your way now, Republicans. Stop it. We're not trying to win the Democrats' favor. We don't care what the Democrats think. The Democrats are laughing at us. I don't care. They're not in charge of the House of Representatives. The Republican Party, by a narrow margin, but the Republican Party now runs the House, and they're having a good old-fashioned dust-up about who should run and go forward as their leader. And that's just fine with me, because it's time. It's time from the political apparatus called the RNC to the House of Representatives to the United States Senate. We need to have a discussion about who's running this party. And I will tell you that I don't think I'm going out on a limb here when I say I speak for most voters who vote Republican, that the three people that are currently leaders of the Republican ranks, Ronna McDaniel, Kevin McCarthy, and Mitch McConnell, I think I feel fairly confident when I say, on behalf of most Republican voters, we're not impressed with that triad. So, to all of my colleagues in media who find this embarrassing and untenable, this fight in the House, I say, shut up. It's healthy. It's necessary. It's a must. It's high pastime. Today, first openly transgender person executed in the United States. It happened in Missouri yesterday. It's hilarious. CNN said, you know, only 17 women have been executed in the United States since 1970-something or other. Only 17 women. This would be real history-making stuff. This would be the 18th woman. Only the 18th woman to be executed in the country. And I said to myself, but wait a minute, this isn't a woman. It's a man, baby. It's a man who was convicted of murdering a woman after raping her. I don't know by textbook definition if that's even possible. Can a woman rape a woman? I suppose maybe. I'm not sure. By definition, I guess sexual assault is sexual assault. And, I'm not going to get into that. But I found that interesting. If I cared to really dig into this, I'm sure we would find the grisly details of this individual raping a woman probably was not, if in fact you can get creative about how a woman would rape a woman, I would guess that's probably not the way the woman that he raped and murdered, probably not what happened. I would guess that was probably more what you would traditionally think of man-woman sexual assault would be my bet. I didn't go digging into it, but I just read enough details to say, that's interesting. So he was convicted of raping and murdering a woman, and now we're supposed to pretend that this is a woman. And here's my favorite part of this story yesterday. This person executed, first transgender. Everything's got to be the first transgender. Even a depraved, murderous rapist. We've got to celebrate their execution as the first for transgender history. Yeah. Quite an advertisement. Do you know that the guy who's pretending to be a woman who was executed in Missouri yesterday, do you know the request for clemency was based on, did you hear the defense? I read this just in passing, and I just found it extraordinary. You want to take a guess? They were asking the governor of Missouri not to kill him yesterday. Because... what was the defense? Don't kill me because... want to take a stab at it?
Because I'm a woman?
No. I have childhood trauma, and as such, I have... I don't have control of my mental faculties. I have severe psychiatric problems. Stipulated. And that was the first and only honest thing in the entire report on this person executed yesterday, is the fact that yes, in fact, you have a psychiatric condition when you believe you are not the gender you were born. And this, ironically, in the 11th hour before this person is killed yesterday for murder and rape of another, his outgoing defense is, please don't kill me. I'm crazy. I need help. Yes. And yet today, I have a number of stories in front of me. Cosmo lists 100 gender-neutral baby names to break very tired male-female binary. F those norms. Cosmo magazine releasing a new article yesterday recommending 100 gender-neutral names for your future heir because, heaven forbid, when your baby is born, you should celebrate their gender at birth because they may, in a couple of years, decide they don't like that gender. You and the doctor made a mistake. The doctor delivers the baby and says, it's a boy. That's presumptuous, isn't it? How do you know that baby in a couple of years might not look up at you and go, I'm a girl now? You know, that's the first words. That could happen. You don't know when. I don't know when the clarity happens for a toddler. I don't know. You have a little son in there. He's, what, three? I don't know when it is. He speaking yet? Does he have words?
He has a vocabulary. Yeah.
Okay. Has it been, I'm a girl? Have you heard him say that yet?
Not yet. Not that one.
Okay. Get ready.
Yeah.
By the way, you named him Eddie, which is a terribly cis normative thing to do. I mean, it really should have been something more like Maddox. So that if he looks at you in about a year, maybe 6 months, who knows, once he can finally formulate full sentences, I want to be a girl now. Which is what we're all to be on the lookout for. Your little Eddie, you've assumed a lot in giving him a male name and assuming and raising him and dressing him as a male. You're assuming all kinds of things in there, and you're putting a tremendous amount of pressure on him because he may want to be a girl soon. And I don't know that you've done all that you can do to make him comfortable with that decision should he choose it here any time now, according to Cosmo. So I just, maybe it's time to go to the courthouse, you know, take some white out to the birth certificate where it states male, because that's, you know, that's assuming a lot. He may not want to be that later. The Eddie thing, you may want to out in with something more gender neutral and friendly.
He's going to have a tough time. I mean, he can't go from Richard to Rachel like that with Eddie, because it's either Eddie and Edwina.
Edwina?
Yeah, that's not going to work, right?
No, that would be uncomfortable. Number of American minors seeking sex changes has doubled since 2017. The number of American children being treated for gender dysphoria has risen sharply in recent years, with prescriptions for puberty blockers doubling from 2017 to 2021. This from the Daily Mail. The data come from health insurance reports, meaning actual numbers are likely to be much higher. Why is health insurance so expensive in this country? How do you feel about paying for health insurance that now covers your colleagues' children having puberty blockers and gender reassignment surgery? Our insurance is outrageous! Well, if you keep asking insurers to pay for Frankenstein's lab experiments, yeah, it ain't going to get any cheaper anytime soon. I assume Obamacare covers that, right? I don't know. I haven't looked into it. The meteoric rise in American doctors attempting to perform sex changes on minors has occurred while other nations are starting to move away from affirmation and puberty suppression and back to a more cautious psychotherapeutic approach for this vulnerable cohort of young people. Sweden, Finland, England, France, New Zealand all recently abandoned the affirmative model of care due to concerns that the risks far outweigh the benefits. Isn't this always the way Western Europe decides to get enlightened, just as they have on energy? We're going to move away from oil, and we're going to move away from coal, and we're going to go with wind and solar. And now what are they doing? Literally tearing those things down to dig coal as fast as they can and build new coal-fired power plants. Holy crap, it's cold, and this stuff doesn't work very well. And what? Our only source of fuel is Russia, and we're in a hot war there? And they're not giving us stuff now because we support the other guys? Oh, we've kind of screwed ourselves, and it's awful cold. Well, we can burn furniture, or start digging coal, fellas! What do we a-holes do here in the United States? Oh, we like that European model. Let's go to wind and solar and get rid of that fossil fuel stuff. Lickety split. Europe has done all this for us already. They've done all this. They've gone through their enlightened, smart, you know, wizards of smart period where they're going to be smarter than everybody else and they're going to do without fossil fuels. And now they're freezing to death and building coal-fired power plants. When do we, like, Europe's done it. They're the canary in the coal mine. All you have to do is watch them. But no, these egg-headed left-wing statists, they see what Europe does, and they start mentally masturbating over it every time. Ooh! I want to be cosmopolitan and French! Let's do what the French are doing. Ooh la la. That'll make me seem elite. I can sound fancy at cocktail parties when I talk about what the French people are doing. That's what we're trying to implement here. We vulgar, consumption-driven Americans. We need to be more like the French. So, just like that, just like energy, now the trans stuff. For years and years and years, the enlightened model in Western Europe was, yeah, let's take the kids to the lab and try to rewire them. And affirm that if they're not the gender they were born, they can be whatever gender they want. Yeah, let's do that. Well, after years and years of doing this, they found out, gosh, we're really screwing up whole generations of kids. This is a disaster. We're turning these people into suicidal psychopaths. Maybe we should hold off on pumping them full of puberty blockers and radically castrating and physically maiming and altering their minor developing bodies. Maybe we should hold off on that and have a talk with a therapist first. Maybe, says Western Europe, this is a mental health issue. Okay, boys, start digging coal and shut down the gender labs. We got a crisis on our hands. Yet what do the a-holes in the United States, in the American left do, in the Democrat Party? They say, I like what Europe's doing over there with the solar and the wind and the sex change operations. Let's do it. Sane people are going, and they're backing away from all of that now. All of this stuff that you think's enlightened and that you're heralding Europe for doing, they're now leaving it because they're in dire straits. What do? We put Rachel Levine, Admiral Levine, in charge of the discussion. Astounding. So it's an industry now. Bottom line, it's an industry now. A lot of people, a lot of children's hospitals, a lot of doctors making tons of money off of this business of my little Eddie thinks he's a girl now. Oh, really? Well, Eddie, hop on up here. Would you like some puberty blockers? Want us to hack that thing off? Do a little nip and tuck and a little kitty cut and a little snip snip and a little, and there you go. Edwina, you look lovely. Now, run out there and conquer the world, little lady. I'm sure he'll be fine. He's 12, though. Nah, it'll be fine. Fast forward 40 years later, he's on death row in Missouri begging for help. Don't kill me. Sorry I murdered that lady. I'm crazy. One of the insurrectionist Republicans who dares vote against California Kevin. He's a Pennsylvanian. He's also, you know, a guy like Scott Perry, I just have a funny feeling, might be a little prickly since the FBI, as you recall, stopped him one day while I think he said he was on family vacation and said, hey there, Congressman, FBI, yeah, hand us your phone, please. And he said, beg pardon? Yeah, we want your phone. Why? Yeah, we're just doing some, work on January 6th, and we think you're guilty of stuff. We don't have any real evidence. We don't have a warrant. Just give us your phone. Now, he complied because he has nothing to hide. So he said, okay, here, have my phone. And they gave it back. Do you think maybe that a guy like Scott Perry might be a little concerned about the future of the country? Who's really running it? And now aware that Republicans in this deliberative body called the House of Representatives, who are supposed to hold these people accountable, do you think maybe he thinks that maybe people like Kevin McCarthy aren't entirely serious about getting to the bottom of the FBI harassing sitting members of Congress for their cell phones? Do you think he has a right to be a little prickly? I do. So he'll be with us today, and I just have a hunch. I'm going to say it for him now. Maybe he'll correct me. I have a hunch that might be why he's a little nervous to just rubber stamp Kevin McCarthy as the next Speaker of the House. Maybe he wants something, someone with a little more teeth. Can you blame him?
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.
For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, Chris, my husband and I really enjoy your show. Thanks for doing what you do.
Hi, Chris, I love the show.
You're just breaking rules all over the place.
Thank you very, very much for your sane reasoning and conversation.
The American people don't care who the speaker is. The American people care that they're paying $5 for a dozen eggs. They care that they can't afford their energy bills. They care about a wide open border and rampant crime in their communities. They don't care about this. So how are we going to fix this if we keep doing the same things and getting the same outcomes?
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Great to be with you today, and a happy new year to you. Those of you who weren't here yesterday because you thought, oh, Stigall's been on vacation for like 2 weeks. A lot of people don't catch the return show because they assume I'm never coming back. They figure I've been fired again or something. And so they hear I'm back on Tuesday, and then now they're here today. So you're here today now because you missed yesterday. And it's a shame you missed yesterday because it was a good one. But it's an even better one today. This is the one. If you're going to catch a show, today's show is the day. So you're in luck. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. One of the 20 insurrectionists inside the Republican Party joins us today, and aren't we thrilled? I'm teasing when I say it. I say that tongue-in-cheek, but that's the way, you know, the cable news punditocracy would have you believe. This is just the most untenable thing. All the very, very smart people who have names you know and have been on TV for a long time are all very displeased with these 20 people. One of them is on the phone with me now, and I actually reached out to him yesterday on Twitter, and I said, I would just love to have you on the show to articulate what's going on from your point of view, since we're not hearing from you, we're just hearing you called names. And this is just not normal. This is the course of businesses. Kevin McCarthy should be speaker, and that's that, and these 20 people are just holdouts, and it's a food fight. And so they've been called every name in the book. I don't see much opportunity for them to just kind of fairly explain themselves, so I invited Republican Congressman from Pennsylvania, Scott Perry, here, who's one of the 20 yesterday, who said, no, in three different votes, we think we're going to go a different direction than Kevin McCarthy. He joins us now. Congressman, it's a thrill to have you on the show today. Thanks for your time and Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to you, Chris, and thanks so much for the opportunity. And there's a lot to cover here, so I want to give it some context. We've been watching, for instance, these midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, 4,000-page, $1.7 trillion dumps on us. Quite honestly, ever since I've been in Congress, this is how things are done now. And it's bankrupting the American people, and it's destroying our country. And so foreseeing what we're watching playing out right now, early on, I went to Leader McCarthy last summer and said, look, we want to talk about changing the way we do business here so we don't have to endure that over and over again. And quite honestly, he kind of patted me on the head and sent me packing. And I went back to him in the fall with a group of folks that were like-minded and said, look, we have a constructed set of principles here. And we put them out, Chris, to the whole conference. It wasn't just me and McCarthy. Everybody could read this stuff. We sent it out to everybody on multiple occasions, by the way. And again, we were rebuffed. And so I went back in on Wednesday after the election when it was pretty apparent there was no red wave. And he was slightly interested in talking to me about it. But I can tell you this, if we'd have had a 240 seat majority, there would have been no discussion whatsoever. And so, look, it became very serious, the discussion at least, because there were people that said, look, we're just simply not going to keep doing this. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. So in good faith, we just kept negotiating and trying to find some place. And, you know, it's perilous in Washington, D.C., because everything you do is used against you. But he said, I want to, you know, put it down on paper so I can show everybody. And it's not just, you know, your word. And this is a guy, by the way, that there, a lot of the members have trust issues with because he's often said one thing and done another. And that's a whole that's a huge component in here. But that's another part of the story. So we put it on paper on December 8th. We said these are the things that we need to see some closure on you know, if you're going to become speaker. And there's already five out there that said absolutely never. And I told him, I went to his office, I called him up, said, can I come over? I said, Kevin, the longer you wait, the worse this is going to get. People are getting solidified in their positions, and you need to do something fairly dramatic or it's not going to change. It's going to get worse. He didn't do anything, Chris. He didn't do a thing. What we saw was we went to a meeting that would have never happened except for pushing him to discuss leadership and the rules. And everybody got a browbeating. You're told to get in line or you wouldn't get committee positions. And for instance, the issue of accountability for the speaker, it lasted. Thomas Jefferson wrote it, and it lasted for 200 years until Nancy Pelosi changed it. And many of the members wanted that accountability to come back because the speaker is the most powerful person in the building. And not only did they not bring it back to Thomas Jefferson, they took what Nancy Pelosi had and put it on steroids and jammed it down everybody's throat. Well, that really set the tone. Okay, so we're trying to work through this, and we're trying to avoid what you're seeing right now. On the night before all this happened, which is yesterday, the night before that, understanding there are many members now that are just hard nose, I browbeat people for 7 hours in a room to somehow, how do you get to yes? And we put a package together, and we go to him at 5:30 and say, Kevin, we can give you 218 if we do these things right here. And let me tell you what some of those things include. So he wanted a list of names. He wanted a list of names of people that we wanted to serve on certain committees because structure is really important to how things happen here. What he did after we finally gave him a list of names is said these people came in with a wish list for themselves. He asked for this list of names to get to 218. But the other thing we wanted, how about this, a balanced budget amendment from what's called the Republican Steering Committee. We wanted a bill. This is what we wanted in the first quarter, put up on the vote schedule, Chris. So this doesn't mean it's going to go through the Senate and get a signature by President Biden. It just means we're going to do it. Term limit bill for members of Congress. We wanted the Texas border protection bill signed on to by all GOP border members congressmen. We wanted every single earmark to have a possibility of having a vote on the floor so everybody could own the earmarks and everybody could see what people are asking for here in Congress. All that was rejected summarily. That's 218 that you can get. So that's where that ended. That's the night before this. The very next morning, we had a conference, and we're trying to unify, right? You're trying to bring people together. Again, in the conference, it's just a shouting beat down. You people are, anybody that's considering this, they're all going to lose their committees for 2 years. You will not be invited to anything. You will not participate here.
And who's saying that? Scott, can I press you on that? Because I've heard that accusation thrown out there. Is that Kevin McCarthy specifically or his allies threatening that stuff?
It's his allies, but then he backed it up.
So you guys get together in a room, just so we understand how this works. You guys all get together in a room, and you 20 who've opposed him in these three votes, they're basically yelling at you, you're going to pay for this if you don't get in line, kind of a thing.
That's exactly right. And it's the culture, among other things, that you got to change because, Chris, for instance, no member has been allowed to have an amendment on the floor for the last 6 years. Like, how do you represent your district if you're not on the committee of jurisdiction and a bill comes out of that committee and you have no ability to amend it? It doesn't mean that your amendment's going to pass, but your people need a voice.
Congressman, can I ask you, because this is, you know, I take it in full faith what you're saying here. I think you're a person of goodwill. Sounds to me like you've been working and almost warning McCarthy of this coming and trying to help him get across the finish line is what you're telling me. I'm going to trust that that's true. So here's my next question for you, and this is a bit tougher because it's kind of personal. Do you trust Kevin McCarthy? I mean, is there reason for people, Republican voters or you 20, has he given you reason to feel like he's not the most trustworthy guy to go forward to get the... Gates said yesterday in a press conference... Well, let me play this 20 seconds from Gates yesterday. He summarized what I feel. I don't know Kevin McCarthy at all. Never met him. Never interviewed him. I don't know anything about him. So all I know is what I see on cable news, right? So here's what Matt Gaetz said. Take a listen.
But we were threatened by my committee chairman to be on the Armed Services Committee, Mr. Rogers, that if we did not vote for Mr. McCarthy, we would be removed from committees. Our position is that if Kevin McCarthy is the Speaker of the House and we don't have an ability to ensure that there is oomph behind the agenda and energy behind our oversight, that the committee assignments don't mean that much anyway. I'm not here to participate in some puppet show where we pass a bunch of messaging bills, send them to the Senate, watch them die, fail to use leverage, and don't hold the Biden administration accountable. I don't want to relive the Benghazi experience where it's just theater pretending to be oversight, right? We can do better than that, and that's our purpose today.
Okay, so it's theater. Is Kevin McCarthy theater, or is he a guy with teeth? Should we have faith in him? Do you trust him? Help us understand who this man is.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you two data points. The first bill that we're supposed to take up under McCarthy's leadership is the bill to abolish the 87,000 new IRS agents. Chris, the bill's going nowhere. Chuck Schumer's not going to take it up. Joe Biden's not going to sign it. It does nothing. The only way you actually do that is when there's an appropriations bill coming through where funding of the government happens, that you hold that as leverage. You say, we're not funding this. And that's the only tool that we actually have. So that's all just theater. On the trust issue, look, I would just refer you to the article written by his former boss, former member of Congress that he worked for, who characterized him as a habitual liar that lies about his lies. That's not my characterization. That's the former member of Congress that he worked for his characterization. But I will tell you this. We went to him in good faith and gave him what he asked for, and he went out and lied about it in the press and to our faces to disparage and discredit us. And that's the kind of thing that makes it very difficult to negotiate in good faith, or quite honestly, to get people that have decided that they don't want to support him to then come back and support him.
So what are we seeing, Scott Perry? When I see people that I respect a lot and I think are pretty smart and I think tough, guys like Newt Gingrich, when they get on TV and they say that you are sort of morally objectionable people in bucking the rest of your party in the House who has supported Kevin, you have no right to do this. You're wrongheaded. I disagree with this, the former speaker. To be clear, I don't agree with that point of view, but I was a little shocked, frankly, to hear him so aggressively speak out against you. This kind of TV pundit class rallying cry around Kevin McCarthy, what are we watching there?
Look, I'm not going to put myself in the same class at all, but the metaphor for this is thank goodness these folks weren't around when the king still ruled over America and there were some patriots that said we ought to be a free country, because that's exactly the same kind of criticism that they have withstood. Look, I like the former speaker and I agree with him on a whole lot of things. But on this point, I'm just going to say to you, whatever Kevin McCarthy has given, and I'm going to use that word because he uses that word, has given, has come under great pressure. And these are things that almost every single Republican, like even the ones that are mad at us right now, are happy for the changes that were made in the rules package. But he has resisted every single one of them. And even yet, at this moment, everything that he has done, nothing of it allows us to stop the $1.7 trillion midnight dropped, 4,000-page, 7,000 earmarked, loaded up Christmas tree that's going to come in September. And oh, by the way, this is the guy that's running that wants to lead us, who's voted for that exact same thing in 2022, in 2021, in 2020, in 2019, in 2018, in 2017. I mean, this is the guy that's got a track record of votes that where he votes with the Democrat majority on these big spending bills more than he votes with his own party. What are we to say about that?
Scott Perry, here's what I keep hearing, again, from the pundit class, and I'd love you to answer this, because this is the popular phrase over and over again. You guys don't have a plan. You don't have a – you keep moving the goalposts, and you don't even have a name in mind. If it's not going to be McCarthy, who you want it to be? You're just – it's a food fight for the sake of showboating, and you don't have a plan. You're just insurrectionist lunatics who don't know what you want. You just want to be obstructionists. That's what they keep saying about U-20. So what do you say in response to that?
Of course, it's completely untrue. And what you have to understand is the banana republic, third world types tactics, strong arm tactics that we talked about earlier are being used in this as well. And do you think out of 222 Republicans, there's not one other person that wants to be speaker? Do you think that? Because I can guarantee you there's a whole bunch of people that would like to be speaker, but no one will stick their head up because they're going to get it shot off. And so, yeah, of course there's a plan. But and look, the plan also includes Kevin McCarthy. We have said all along, we'll take anybody that's interested in implementing these modest, reasonable changes. We'll take anybody.
Well, I'm going to talk to Biggs tomorrow, right? And I know, like, I watched Gates on the floor right after Jordan gives this speech. This is a confusing moment for a lot of people who watch politics. Jordan gives this speech for about 3 minutes where he says, and I throw my support behind Kevin McCarthy. And then Gates comes down and he says, yeah, I really appreciate everything Jim just said, but I support Jim. And so people are kind of looking at it and they say, well, Jordan just threw his support behind McCarthy and then you guys vote for Jim Jordan. Like, how does that work? So, I mean, just explain that to folks. What are we to make of that? Does Jim Jordan, I mean, he says he doesn't want it. I mean, could the House change the, like, what's the end game, I guess, people ask?
So the end game is either to see if we can get Kevin to some position where he will support these changes or just decide, like, he's never going to do this. We're just going to keep doing the same things every single year. And the American people are going to get the same result, or Kevin's going to finally say, look, I'm not going to get the support. And then there'll be a race for speakership among probably half a dozen people in Congress to lead the effort. I mean, it's going to be one or the other. And quite honestly, if you watch the speech, if you watch Jim Jordan's speech, believe me, everybody in the room, except for the Democrats, of course, but all the Republicans were like, holy smokes, why isn't this guy running for speaker?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's the point, Chris. That's the point.
Yeah, and why is that? I mean, help us understand that, because I hear that from people time to time. They say, boy, I'd love that Jim Jordan to be speaker. Why isn't Jim Jordan speaker? Why couldn't he be? Why not? Why wouldn't he want it? Why hasn't he tried? Is he afraid of Kevin McCarthy? Is it more advantageous to him personally than he not? Just help us understand the political dynamic.
I think Jim feels very comfortable being the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and he's going to be awesome at that. But, you know, the leadership always tries to stick together in solidarity, even if they agree with each other or don't, or like each other or don't. They want to show a united front.
I mean, just so everybody understands this, because I know a couple of members of Congress, long tenured members of Congress, who, you know, are on the Republican side, who are set to become, you know, committee chairs. And it's not that they're in love with Kevin McCarthy. The game is, hey, you know, if I want to keep my chairmanship, if I want to keep the staff, if I want to keep the control, I better not get crossways with Kevin, who they bank on ultimately becoming Speaker of the House. It may not, if it truly were a jump ball, they may not support him, right? But they assume it's a fait accompli.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And let me just tell you this. Most of the time, committee chairmanships, Jim Jordan is the exception. And I will just tell you, Jim Jordan is there not because Kevin McCarthy originally wanted him there. That happened under pressure, too, during the last administration that he ended up there in that position. So, but that's how politics works. But most of these people are selected to be chairman based on how much they donate, how much they contribute financially. And you know, this is probably widely known but not acknowledged, how much they vote with leadership. This is
here's the other thing:
getting everybody in line.
Freshman, I know.
Getting everybody in line, Chris, is destroying our country.
That's right. And I just spoke with a freshman yesterday who, you know, he was in a contested primary, pretty hot contested primary, and McCarthy throws his support behind him, helps him across the finish line. He now feels, right? I mean, he feels loyalty to Kevin McCarthy now. He feels like he's got to support the guy, and he's brand new to the House. I mean, he hasn't even hung a picture on the wall yet in his office, and he's just kind of like, well, I guess, you know, I don't think he has any, you know, natural fondness for Kevin McCarthy. It's just, I guess that's what I better do. But I wonder if turned loose, would he vote the same way, right? I mean, this is the system. I just want everybody to understand the system.
That kind of is the system, and it's kind of, you know, you pat my back and I'll pat yours, but that doesn't mean it's best for the American people. And, you know, this is the position that is third from the presidency. It's arguably one of the most powerful positions about getting things done for the American people. And Congress has got a historically low approval rating. I guess we can just keep doing the same things and not care about our constituents or what the American people want. I just don't see that as good for the Republican Party, if that's what you're interested. I really don't see it as good for the country. And we just keep doing the same thing. So how does it – nobody wants seems to want to ask, well, how does that end?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't want to spend my time – as it was described in the Gates interview, at some puppet show where we keep telling people, oh, we're doing great things for you, knowing straight-faced that they're not going to make any difference. Us passing bills right now. Look, Chris, we can pass every bill we want to for the next 2 years. How many do you think that Chuck Schumer is going to take up? For all
exactly
members
right.
that are here, brand newly elected, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell just handed over all the leverage we had until next September. They just did that, 12 days ago, right before Christmas. So
now, McCarthy would say, hey, I didn't want McConnell to do that. I ran all over TV and said they shouldn't do it. Is that fair? Did he or not?
That was after, Chris, that was after the meeting at the White House where he told everybody he would support that package. But then because he was running for speaker and realized it was going to be perilous, then he changed his position, and everybody in town here knew that it was called, well, I hope it's yes, but I want to vote no. McConnell even said so. McConnell said so, and so did many others. So it's common knowledge. And, oh, by the way, I already gave you his track record on previous spending bills of that ilk, where he's voted for them, oftentimes with a majority of Democrats and against a majority of Republicans. What are we to think of that?
Scott, I have and just in closing here, I said earlier, I have a funny feeling that you are particularly prickly now that Republicans are in control of the House. I just have a sense, given what you've gone through, the FBI deciding to just snatch your cell phone while you're on vacation, and you did so, you handed it over, but I have a feeling you are uniquely concerned about the overarching, aggressive, abusive Department of Justice and the FBI, and I suspect now that Republicans run the House, you would like a meaningful, serious, with teeth, deep dive into organizations like the FBI, I would guess, is what drives people like you. Am I close?
Well, that's one of the things, Chris, obviously, among the spending and the culture in D.C., but that's why I have called for a church-style committee. Church was a senator in the early 70s that looked at the intelligence community and their overreach. And we're seeing that with the American people. And I'm just an example, but it'll come to you, too, with the censorship and online and all that stuff and the collaboration. Yeah, I absolutely think that needs to be looked into. And I will tell you, that was on the list. McCarthy resisted it mightily until the very one morning after the evening before where he told me absolutely not. The next morning he went on Fox and said, well, we're considering this now. When I talked to him further about it, now all of a sudden he's all for it, but he wants it under as a subcommittee under other committees. And if we're going to get to the swamp here and really open up this FISA reauthorization that was used against President Trump, that's been used against people without any due process, we're going to have to deal with a swamp that actually loves that and wants that to continue. And you're going to have some kind of independence. He resisted that completely. Well, if it was good in the 70s to get to this uniparty swamp down here, why can't we do it now?
There are 20 of you at present after this third vote in opposition to McCarthy. He has to peel off 16 of you to win. 16 of you, because he can only afford to lose four. I cannot at present see that he's going to get 16 of you to come home. Do you?
Look, I remain ever optimistic. I'm not a never Kevin guy, but we have to have the tools in place to do the things that we need to do, whether it's oversight or whether it's spending on oversight, Chris. I mean, look at the last series of things that we've done. Benghazi was an epic failure. We had Fast and Furious. There was no accountability. The Awan Brothers computer scandal here in the House with Debbie Wasserman Schultz was a failure. I mean, these are all set up to fail. That is the point. There are some people that can get there. There are certainly not 16. I guarantee you that.
Scott Perry, he is Pennsylvania's congressman from the 10th Congressional District, and we will stay in close contact. I hope we can have you back more regularly as this shakes out. Look, I don't think most Republican voters are very pleased with the state of the Republican Party right now, and I think I speak for the good number of them who say, if we're not going to have this fight now, then when will we have it? Let's have it. And if it takes months, so be it. I think it's important. Well, I'm glad you're having it.
Yeah, we don't want it to take months, but we're going to have it at some point. Better to just get it out of the way and get it over with and move on together. But you can't force people to be unified. And that's what's happening now. There's a forced unification, which always ends up badly later on.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you. Have a great day. God bless you.
I'm not saying he said the words. He attributed them to someone else who wrote about Kevin McCarthy. But did he not, in a subtle way, did Scott Perry not just subtly say, Kevin McCarthy's a liar? I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but that kind of is what I took from that conversation. You?
Yeah, smart and using that's good using somebody
else's. They're not my words.
Yeah, they're not.
It's another guy that wrote it. You can go read it. But I mean, he basically endorsed and confirmed that we can't. I said, like, I don't know Kevin McCarthy. Help me. What are we to make of him? Can we trust him? Do you believe in him? What's this guy's character? And Perry said, well, I mean, you don't have to take it from me. Take it from the guy who was his boss. He'll say anything that he needs to say to get by. You're not to be trusted. I don't personally know Scott Perry, so I don't know these men, but I don't know what makes Scott Perry any more or less trustworthy than Kevin McCarthy. Let's go to George in York very quickly before we go to Emerald for our weekly check-in with her in the new year, just because George is a constituent of Scott Perry's, and I'm just curious how a guy like you, whose congressman is one of these 20 obstructionists that most of the wizards of smart on cable news are saying are terrible people, for opposing Kevin McCarthy. How do you feel about your congressman, George? Good morning.
Well, I support Scott Perry, and he's a fantastic individual, okay? And, you know, the news media has tried to make this guy out to be some kind of right-wing wacko. The last election, I mean, they made him out to, you know, the little clips of things he said. You know how it is. They totally twist the picture of a man, okay? And, frankly, I thought he might lose. I mean, it was that, you know, the way it sounded around here, well, Scott Perry's over and people, you know, the libs don't like him at all, personally, you know, but he ended up winning by like 25 or 30 points. I mean, it wasn't even a contest, you know, so to me, I'm like, okay, now this is a pretty conservative area. Hey, by the way, Chris, I love your show, so I have to listen to it on iHeartRadio, but.
Well, thank you, my friend. George, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Friends about you just really enjoy it. He's a stand-up guy, and I'm sure he did write those letters. He's an organized person. I mean, he's a general in the Pennsylvania State, whatever. He was in the military,
the National Guard.
And he has a great family story too. Growing up super poor in the town,
but
but
just generally speaking, the opposition to McCarthy, this doesn't bother you? Do you get the sense that he's one of only 20 people amongst the Republicans saying no to Kevin McCarthy? So your district, your constituent, his constituents, do you think they're uncomfortable with Scott Perry leading this or being one of the leading voices in this opposition?
Well, I like you said yesterday, I could care less. I'm tired of being spoon-fed people. For years now, I've had to vote for people like Mitt Romney. You know, oh, he's our guy, you know, John McCain. I mean, for years, I've been holding my nose, and I'll tell you, somebody else down your way, you know, or Arlen Specter, you know. Finally, you know, basically the good Lord took him out of office, you know. I'm sick of this stuff. I think the rest of it, what he says is exactly right. You know, we got to start some of the stuff he's saying. That sounds reasonable to me. And McCarthy, I don't know. I'm not sure I trust anybody from California, just between you and me. But, you know,
George, it's great to hear from you, buddy. Happy New Year. Thank you for listening. I got to get to Emerald Robinson now, who's the host of The Absolute Truth. Frankspeech.com, Emerald Robinson on Getter. She's back on Twitter. She's on Substack, where she writes regularly. In fact, she's just written a piece about the hot war going inside the Republican Party. And Emerald, Happy New Year to you, first of all. It's been a bit. How are you?
Happy New Year, Chris. And what a start to the year, right?
Oh, my gosh.
If you had MPG supporting McCarthy on your bingo card, I think most people didn't. But you probably haven't been paying really close attention for the last year, because I'm not too
Yeah, but you have. What I love about Emerald Robinson is she has very unique perspective from Capitol Hill, as she has been hip-deep in the waiters, wearing the hip waiters in the swamp for a very long time. She knows a lot of these players. People reach out to her and talk with her off the record all the time to give her perspective. And so, you know, we just talked to Scott Perry, who laid out very succinctly why these 20 people aren't with McCarthy right now. So we all understand it. But it's just fascinating to watch even people like Newt, people that I really respect, act like it's just the most outrageous thing that this should not be just the course of order that Kevin McCarthy's christened the new speaker. And I'm perfectly comfortable with it. I don't care if this goes on for months. Sincerely, I don't. Let the fight happen, Emerald, is my attitude.
And clearly, that's how real voters feel, for the most part. I've been going through combing through social media, many different platforms, you know, all kinds of different platforms, just to see what regular people are saying, not, you know, TV personalities. And by and large, it is no for McCarthy, no McCarthy. And I was listening to your caller, George, and I think a lot of people are now not even trusting those who have said they were America First pundits, you know, like the great one, quote unquote, not my attribution, Mark Levin, because so many of these people, like you said, told you to hold your nose and vote for Mitt Romney because you need another Republican senator, and look at what he just voted for, a total Democrat agenda. So I think people are tired of that. And if you want to know what Kevin McCarthy is like, I had tried to put my finger on it. He was one of the first people that I asked a question to in Congress. First was Paul Ryan, ironically, on my first day covering Congress as a political correspondent. And Paul Ryan told me to get new shoes because I was wearing some uncomfortable heels, and I lasted longer than he did now. But I try to explain what McCarthy is like to people, how he puts on, he literally goes into a mode, an act, when he's asked a question. It's something to behold, because politicians are notoriously putting on some kind of personality, right? But his is such a stark contrast from him just standing there to when he goes into his mode. And in combing through real reaction on social media, I saw someone who used to be a California resident who had moved to Montana comment on his congressman's timeline and say, you know, the best way I can describe Kevin McCarthy is a really seedy used car salesman. And you know what? That person's absolutely right. I finally know how to describe Kevin McCarthy.
So can you guess, because you're good at this, I missed it. I make a point to ignore most of the time, and not for personal reasons, but because I don't like other people's commentary to influence the way I do the show. So I'm not familiar. Are guys like Levin out there saying they want McCarthy? Yeah. I know Newt is. Levin is pro McCarthy. Interesting.
Hardcore. I mean, he did this 8-tweet thread saying how people who are basically not backing McCarthy are traitors, they're pushing the Democrat agenda, blah, 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 blah. But if you look back in 2015, Mark Levin was vehemently anti-McCarthy, talking about how he was a shield for Silicon Valley. He's controlled by the Uniparty. He's a hollow shell who has no standards or morals. Everything that people who do not want to support McCarthy today is saying. And what I also find interesting is that this is just what how McCarthy is known, even from Never Trumpers to, you know, Democrats to the Freedom Caucus, is that he's not a man of his word. He will change his position as he sees fit day to day. And what I think you can see, if you're someone just watching and you don't even have your mind made up or you don't know that much, I thought it was really telling yesterday when they came out of their conference meeting, the Republicans, and how each responded, the two sides responded. The Freedom Caucus members who are saying no to McCarthy laid out why in great detail. I thought Matt Gaetz had made a very strong case for not supporting McCarthy based on the terms they offered him and what they wanted to see that he rejected. It was very detailed. And it was definitely not a Democrat agenda. It was very much of America First agenda that they wanted him to commit to and they couldn't get him to commit to. But even if they did get him to commit, I've talked to several of them off the record and they say, look, you know, I mean, Kevin is who he is, you know, whether he's a friend or, you know, not a nice guy or not, it doesn't even matter. We have just learned we cannot take him at his word. He has lied to us time and time again, and that's how they feel. But then you look at Marjorie Taylor Greene and Dan Crenshaw coming out of that meeting, and they're slinging insults. They're extremely emotional, and they don't present any specifics on why they think McCarthy. They just say it has to be this way.
Here's Crenshaw. Let's play Crenshaw from yesterday as an example of what you're talking about.
This handful of members is very clearly looking for notoriety over principle. If you're a narcissist and you believe that your opinion is so much more important than everyone else's, then you'll keep going. And you'll threaten to tear down the team for the benefit of the Democrats just because of your own sense of self-importance. That's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah, narcissists. Crenshaw calls them narcissists and selfish. Newt said Monday that there's a moral imperative and that these 20 people are morally unjust. His words, morally unjustified in opposing the rest of the conference. And I thought that particular use of the word moral was kind of outrageous from Newt, who I really respect a lot. I don't think there's any moral obligation to support Kevin McCarthy. Do you?
I was very surprised by that comment as well, and I'm not sure why Newt is doing this, but I have to question why a lot of people are backing Kevin McCarthy. Like I said, people who have been very critical of him in the past, and I even called out, you know, Ben Shapiro yesterday for this. He's one of those on that train too. But a lot of the people who are, I think there's a commonality here. I've been trying to find the thread, except for Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't think this is her rationale, but whatever her reasoning is, a lot of people, I will tell you, that is one of the biggest questions floating around in D.C. right now is like, what is the incentive for Marjorie to do this? And is I think she even surprised Steve Bannon on War Room yesterday because she appeared, the word used most often by people was unhinged. I had a couple of her constituents call me just shocked, saying she seems unhinged, and they're asking, is it positive or negative reinforcement? Because they're not sure. But there is a common thread with, you know, like Mark Levin and some of the pundits you see, in that they're very this pro-Ukraine push, you know, and supporting Ukraine, and you see them backing McCarthy, and there seems to be something there with that, I would say.
Marjorie Taylor Greene has some issues, suffice it to say. I mean, I know she's going through a divorce, but she's also, you know, I mean, she's I would think that Kevin McCarthy has probably been pretty helpful to her political salvation. I mean, at one point she was back of the bus. You know, Democrats wanted her ousted. I think McCarthy kind of saved her bacon. She probably is loyal to him now, don't you suppose?
Yes, and you saw a significant shift after she went through that controversy over alleged anti-Semitic statements, and she got pulled from committees, and, you know, she had all that happen. There was some backroom meetings, and I think Marjorie has a big voice. People have really liked her and respected her across the country. She's a national figure, not just a Georgia figure. And McCarthy seized on an opportunity to help her out. And I had spoken with one of her aides not too long ago when she voiced support for McCarthy a few months ago, but not suggesting that they were still trying to say she would not support him for speaker. And I was told, well, she has to do this for right now just so they can get through this. But they insinuated to me that she would not support him for speaker. And I told them at the time, I don't believe that's true. She's doing this now. I think she will be in his corner, and I don't think her voters are going to understand that. And here we are, and that is the case. So she's been playing this for quite some time now, and I think you're absolutely right. I think there could be a lot of factors here. I think there's positive factors, the potential for committee assignments, but I think there's also possible repercussions if the Unity Party thinks she can't get people on board.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line, freshmen, I was talking to Scott Perry about this, you know, just so everybody understands it, and I think most people do, freshmen who are brand new are terrified. They just assume that McCarthy's going to become speaker, and even if they don't want to, or they've been told by their constituents, don't you go there and support McCarthy, well, now they're there, and the prospects of getting crossways with the most powerful guy on Capitol Hill is not something a new freshman wants to do, so, they'll fall in line most of the time, and as for the old tenured people, you know, they're sitting for plum committee assignments. They don't want to get crossways with the guy they assume is all. But all of that is predicated on the assumption that it's Kevin McCarthy's. It's no one else's. There's no other way it can go. If all of these people were given a truth serum and there was no such presumptive figure, I think this would be a far different vote. I don't think it would be close. I don't think most of these people would be ferociously loyal to Kevin McCarthy. They just assume he's going to ascend. And so they're operating out of fear. That's what I think most people should understand about why the Republicans seem to vote in uniformity with McCarthy. Do you think that's about right?
I think that's true. And I think it's very brave of those 19 who voiced opposition. I think that is reassuring to American voters, and that it does seem like everything's such a foregone conclusion, especially these days, and that you can't really affect anything, right? Yeah. So at least with some people trying, it gives people hope, I think. But I don't know if you've seen this, but I was just looking right now, Chris. As of last night, it had been a little bit iffy as to if Trump would continue to support Kevin McCarthy. And I talked to some of Trump's team yesterday, and it was sort of like, or, you know, some members around him, and it wasn't for sure. But it looks like just now Donald Trump has further reiterated his support for Kevin McCarthy, suggesting you have to vote for him, and that he said just now he'll do a good job and maybe even a great job. Just watch.
But you know, that was what he put it. He said that on Truth Social.
Yeah, about less than 10 minutes ago. I remember when, you know, Donald Trump told me, well, Bill Barr is either going to be, just an average attorney general, or maybe he'll end up being really great and amazing. And then we know how that went. He was well below average.
Wow. Here's what Trump says. Really good conversations took place last night. Now it's time for all of our great Republican House members to vote for Kevin, close the deal, make the victory, and watch crazy Nancy Pelosi fly back home to a very broken California. Kevin McCarthy will do a great job, maybe even a great job. Just watch. Okay. How do you read that? What does that mean? Any guesses?
I think Trump is afraid, too. Honestly, he's being told by many around him that you know, there's a real potential for a shared power coalition, or that the Democrats will get Hakeem Jeffries in, that some Republicans will flip. But that's just not the case. There's no appetite for that.
He has to get McCarthy. The math on this thing is he has to get to 218, which means of these 20 people who have voted against Kevin McCarthy, he needs 16 of them to come back to him. I don't think he gets 16. He can't lose more than four. Unless something really big happens, how are you going to get 16 people to come back to you?
And I'm sure he's trying to get Democrats to vote present, right? But it sounds like there's not enough of them willing to do that. And look, how much will Trump's, you know, 11th hour re-endorsement do? I don't know, because when I spoke with some members, and this would have been interesting, I think, to have Scott Perry on. I wish if this had happened while you had Scott Perry on, this would be helpful for all of us today, right? To hear the reaction. is how much this will affect these 19 and maybe others who are looking to defect. I'm not sure, because after he gave the initial endorsement, I talked to you know, some of the original five who were opposed to McCarthy, and I asked, does this, you know, undermine them in any way? Does it change their course of action? And for them, it really didn't. They said that, you know, they have great respect for Donald Trump, but in this, they just don't think McCarthy's the right person, and that their allegiance is to their constituents and the American people first, and that, you know, they're going to keep opposing McCarthy. So given that, and who are the current opposers, I don't see McCarthy winning back that support. It'll be interesting to see how this develops during the day. And look, if McCarthy was out for McCarthy, he would step aside.
Yep.
Because it's more than Jim Jordan who could do that role. Look, I think Jim Banks has respect amongst the entire conference.
I think Biggs is terrific. I love Andy Biggs. You, or am I wrong?
No, I mean, I clearly do. I have a congressman on all the time. I think I honestly would say out of everyone, and, you know, I'll always list a couple of good ones, and there's not many. But I do think he's solid, and I think he really, really tries to do what he thinks is right for the American people and his constituents, and he doesn't bow to intimidation or to corporate interests. And that is unusual, and I think he would do a great job. I just don't think that he can get the wide, and I'm not sure he does either, I think he can get the wide support of the conference, but he felt
there
like
is,
McCarthy the had to be challenged.
As you know, there is literally no reason to be anything but ferociously obstructionist at this point. That's all this House
right.
is going to be good for. They can't do anything but be ferociously obstructionist. So who's the most ferocious obstructionist pit bull we can get? Is what I think Republican voters want. That's what I think.
Well, that Maybe might be Matt Gaetz. And one would have used to have said Marjorie Taylor Greene, but I mean, you know, and there has been previously talk, two names have been floated around of people who, I'll say three, actually, if you included Donald Trump, but, you know, clearly he's not interested in that. And the members of Congress didn't feel like Donald Trump could get the support across the conference to be speaker. But, you know, a lot of people still throw that out there. But there were a couple of names, not Donald Trump, that had been floated and talked about a strategy of bringing in, because it doesn't have to be a sitting member of Congress.
That's right. That's
and
right.
There are some people that the entire conference really respects that some members thought could be brought in. So I thought that might get more traction yesterday, and I was surprised it didn't. But if it remains at a stalemate, perhaps that's also still something that is out there.
Well, I know you're going to be covering it extensively throughout this whole episode. Emerald Robinson's show is called The Absolute Truth. Watch it. It's posted every day on Getter. She's back on Twitter, frankspeech.com. Get the app. You can watch it there, too. We never miss it. She's with us every week. Emerald, great to catch up with you again. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Chris. Here's to 2023.
610-850-0990 is the telephone number. 610-850-0990. Still to come, what does Colonel Kurt Schlichter think about this? I haven't spoken to him about it, but I have a funny feeling he's not a fellow that minds a fight.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Thank you, Chris, very much. You have a great show. You have a highly rated show, too, by the way, in case they haven't been telling you lately.
Good morning, Chris. You're my voice of hope.
The 20th Amendment to the Constitution. The chair declares the second session of the 117th Congress adjourned. Sinai die.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Something I did not get a chance to get to yesterday, and I wanted to discuss with you while I was away on the break, were a series of stories throughout that devastating cold that much of the country had. And it was notable to me because, one, we all felt it and we're living it, and it's just really the beginning of winter. But to have that kind of dramatic cold always amuses me because you never hear weather people talk about how freakishly, dangerously, and it was dangerous, and it killed people by the dozens, how dangerously cold it gets. And when that happens, it almost never seems to get the kind of hysterical coverage the heat does. One guy I know who notices that a lot is Greg Wrightstone. He's a geologist and executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia, best-selling author of Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. And I was so glad that he made time for us today because I have a series of questions for him. But Greg, first of all, Happy New Year and welcome back. I wonder if you notice this too. When we have these extreme cold snaps, the media never seems nearly as hysterical about our role in those, are they?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we just got our research associate for the CO2 Coalition is Vijay Jayaraj. He's based in Bengaluru, India, in southern India. And he writes a lot about not only energy poverty in the developing world, but he writes about what's going on weather and climate-wise around the world. And he had two commentaries recently concerning the extreme cold that we're seeing outside of the United States, and particularly the an article last week on the UK and Australia experiencing these. He got blasted on social media about people. You don't understand the difference between weather and climate. Well, as you know, weather is when it gets really cold, unusually cold. And according to them, climate is when it gets unusually warm. And it's just been in stark contrast what we've just seen recently. And now the same people that were saying you can't talk about the extreme cold in the United Kingdom and in France and Germany, now they're going through a heat wave this week. Well, that's climate. And they're going doubling down and tripling down on this warming is unusual, and it's being driven by, if you'll pardon me, our sins of emission of CO2. And so they're blaming it on us for heat, but yet, as you said, cold kills some 15 to 20 times as many people as does heat.
Yeah, cold is just, it's so devastatingly deadly, so much more deadly than heat. And I wonder if you've thought much about the psychology of it. Is it, there's a psychological component to even your local weather person who will, mm-hmm. who will put their arms lovingly around man-made climate change as the reason for extreme heat in the summer. But they don't do it in the winter, and it doesn't seem that the conversation is equivalent during the extreme cold. I'm really trying to figure out the psychology of it. Are we inclined to be more uncomfortable in the heat? Is that it, or what?
No, I believe, and I do know some television weathermen and meteorologists that are pretty well known, and they will tell you they believe, as I do, that increasing CO2 is not driving catastrophic warming events or driving some catastrophic temperatures, but they can't state it publicly. They can work around the edges because they'll be shown the front door or the back door, perhaps, and ushered out of the studio, never to return. You have to toe the company line. It's not just TV weathermen and meteorologists. It's those in academia that are silenced. And in fact, we just had at the CO2 Coalition, we had a professor, a PhD, and I'm not even going to tell you what science it was, that talked to us about becoming a member of the CO2 Coalition. And our chairman advised him that you're going through the tenure process at your university. If you join with us and publicly join us as a member, it's very likely you won't, number one, you're not going to get tenure, and you might get fired. Mm. And his advice to this professor was, get tenure and then let's talk. And then this is what we see happening is the silencing of true science. We see it. And that's kind of what's going on here with your local TV weatherman and weatherwoman. Just again, it's what I call towing the company line on climate.
around Christmas, or just before Christmas, just the day after Christmas in Buffalo, that terrible blizzard, I read reports of upwards of 40, 50 people died. I mean, there was some horrifyingly graphic video of people just laying face down in the snow, having dropped dead and frozen stiff in the blizzard. Yeah. You don't see that stuff during heat. You just don't.
No, and what we're really going to see is, again, we talked about 15 to 20 times as many people die due to cold-related deaths as heat-related. And we're going to see a significant increase in that, as we particularly we're seeing it in the EU and UK with increasing electricity and energy costs. People are making the choices between heating their homes and buying food, heating their homes and doing the other necessary things that need to be done. And with the very people are keeping their homes and their flats extremely cold, which then leads to bad consequences. And we do see, you know, if we look at it with many more deaths due to cold, you can make a strong case that global warming will save lives, and a lot of them. When you say that, heads are exploding. Because that's just not, you can't say things like that.
I know. And
even though it's true.
And crop yields. I mean, the earth is getting greener. Crop yields are more food is produced, right? Yeah. All of that's true with CO2.
Yeah, I'm at my home in Florida right now, and I'll be heading back to our CO2 Coalition offices on Sunday. I'm really desperately trying to finish my second book, and that's really the gist of the second book. The first book was Inconvenient Facts. That's still very popular. But this book is going to deal with really the many benefits of the combination of modest warming and increase in CO2. And there's a part of the book is just an exploration of human history over the last several thousand years and climate history and temperature. And we see that there's a strong correlation between the rise and fall of temperature and the rise and fall of great empires and civilizations. And it's just opposite of what we're being told. We look and we find all the previous warming periods, much warmer than today, were hugely beneficial to humanity. Food was abundant. Life was good. Great empires and civilizations arose. And then it's each one of these warm periods ended horribly with rapid cooling, famine, crop failure, pestilence, and mass depopulation.
Wow.
Related to cold periods. Completely opposite. We should be welcoming. We should be making plans. The military's looking at climate change. We have to prepare for climate change. They're looking at it in the wrong context. Because the context of history tells us we should be figuring out how we protect our population and the citizenry of just not the United States, but the world, from future global cooling. It will get cold again, and when it does, it will be bad. It won't be as bad as in the 13th century or during the Dark Ages, because we're not moving food around with ox carts, and we've got refrigeration. But what we saw during those other older periods, those cold periods, was crop failure. And the same thing will occur going when it happens again.
Yeah, and Greg, it feels as though, as you mentioned, Europe, they've set themselves up for such colossal energy supply failures. They're now revisiting coal plants and coal mining and nuclear because, as you say, you know, they've slipped into some pretty dramatic cold and their energy costs are through the roof. I see here in the same period of time that we were dealing with those dramatic cold snaps during Christmas. There were two other stories that I called folks' attention to at my newsletter, and I know you saw. Eastern U.S. power grid declares emergency. Power outages top 1 million. Flight disruptions persist amid storm chaos. Utilities imposing rolling blackouts as power grid in emergency amid cold blast. Now, that story was going on simultaneously with another one. Power station attacks. Authorities in Washington state say at least three more substations have been attacked in the latest string of attacks. Now, those are unrelated, but they're both extremely dangerous. And when you put them together in big cold weather events, we're sitting ducks.
Are they unrelated?
Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Think about this. These are, who's likely doing these? And I'll pose that the likely candidates for these attacks are those that hate the American energy system and coal-fired energy and oil and all the rest. The ones that are promoting green energy are probably doing this. We don't know for sure. They haven't caught them. If that's the case, those same people are agitating for much higher electricity costs, much greater percentage of our electricity generated from unreliable renewables, and which that is the cause of the of this grid near failure that we saw. And we missed it. We didn't bite the bullet. We missed a potential tragedy because the cold that we experienced was very short lived.
Yes.
We've seen in the past where these cold spells go for weeks at a time. And the what we found, just like in Texas 2 years, 3 years ago, when these high pressure cold systems come down out of the Arctic, they just stay in the center of the United States and there's virtually no wind. And so, and in the winter, solar is goes to virtually zero during the winter months. And then the wind stops blowing and electricity generation from these wind turbines plummets. And so it just disappears. Renewables disappear during these extreme high pressure, cold periods. It just sits there again with no wind blowing and then no wind turbine generated electricity.
We have this.
We were spared what could have been a really bad situation when we saw in Texas 3 years ago.
I know this sounds ridiculous, but I genuinely believe there's a whole population of people that think the poles are warming and ice is melting, and so extreme cold is almost not a thing at all anywhere to be found. I really am actually convinced people don't even really believe extreme cold is a thing. You know, the polar bears are drowning and all that rot from a few decades ago that Al Gore started. Overstating it, but I think there might be some truth to it. People don't believe there's real cold.
Well, and not only it could be from lack of reporting, and which is one of the genesis of really this phone call was lack of reporting of the cold. And the other thing that I've recently been talking about has been at the last COP meeting, the climate meeting we just had that concluded last month, there was a huge amount of talk about climate reparations led by Vanuatu and the Maldives, the two lowest lying nation states of islands in the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. It's going to be underwater within the next decade or two decades. And they said the highest points on these islands are 10 or 12 feet above sea level. It sounds pretty bad until, as a geologist, I'll put this in perspective, 20,000 years ago, both of those islands, 20,000 years ago, were just above sea level, 10 or 12 feet, 15 feet above sea level. Sea level has risen 400 feet since that time 20,000 years ago. Here we are, the same islands, 400 feet of sea level rise later, here they are. A lush paradise above sea level and not swamped. And what they're telling us is, well, it did rise 400 feet, but the next 8 inches will put us under. And that's just not the case. It's a geologic process known as accretion. With these island building, as sea level rises and falls, the islands adapt to it. And it's just crazy that they would say that, yeah, well, we survived 400 feet of sea level rise, but sea level's rising at about 10 inches per century. So another 8 inches of sea level rise between now and 2100 is not going to put these islands underwater. And plus, if you Google the Maldives and construction boom, you'll find out that there is a huge construction boom of resort complexes being built oceanside in the Maldive Islands, the most at-risk nation. There are three airports being constructed there. I think one of them is complete now. Well, the insurance companies are insuring these large $100 million complexes. Well, they avoid risk. Why would any insurance company risk and insure something that's going to be underwater in a few years? The answer is they wouldn't, because they make reasonable calculations and estimates based on the science.
I um, I also think that because summertime has maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days of heat, extended heat, maybe is it the heat waves, quote, heat wave. We never talk about cold waves. And as you said, it was short lived. But I defy anybody who just went through that cold snap around Christmas to tell me that that wasn't alarming and more miserable than any kind of heat wave we'd have in July or August. I keep coming back to that because it's already forgotten in rearview mirror stuff, but it was scary enough that, you know, like my heater, which is a propane backup, you know, it's a heat pump. It had to go on emergency generation backup with propane because the guy came out and said the thing had frozen. He said, your unit's just not made for this kind of cold. He said, we're getting calls like this all over town. And I thought to myself, this is disastrous if this were prolonged.
Yeah, I remember I'd lived in one, it was a cabin in the middle of nowhere of West Virginia, and we had a heat pump, and it just, in the really cold weather, would it warm the cabin? Well, it's more of like an A-frame. Would it warm it so what you weren't freezing? Yes, but you never got to where it was comfortable. It just didn't have that capability.
Yeah.
So we backed it up, of course, with a wood stove where I was.
I don't know. It crystallized in my mind. And of course, I was away from the air for a couple of weeks, so I wasn't able to really come on the air and rant about it. But that alarms me 10 times more. That cold weather alarmed me more than any heat ever did. And I think most people feel the same way if they were honest, but no one ever assigns it man-made. You never hear it. That's what bothers me.
Well, the winter has only begun. We've only just begun. This won't be the last cold spell we're going to experience this winter. And it won't be the last cold spell they experience in the Ukraine or the EU or the UK. It's in the Australia summer now. But again, it was just last week. It was extremely cold summertime in Australia. And we see these bizarre, again, it's weather. There's so many issues here that we can talk about, but the dangers that we see are the complacency of our government officials to, not complacency, they want to do something. They think there's a climate crisis that needs to be solved, and I get angered with some of our GOP leaders that embrace this conservative solution. Well, it's a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah.
They want to spend $850 billion. We said, well, we don't want to spend $3.5 trillion. We just want to spend eight. No, one red penny, 1 cent spent to solve a non-existent problem is one penny too many.
Yes.
And that's what the GOP and these so-called conservatives with a conservative solution are promoting.
When you're new,
and I say no.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Greg, when your new book comes out, is that due out this year?
This year being 2023, yes.
Okay, great. Well, when it hits, I hope we can have one of the first interviews to talk about it.
You betcha.
The book, in the meantime, is called Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Greg Wrightstone is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition and author of that book. Great to catch up with you. Happy New Year, Greg. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Don Lemon over there at CNN, unless I've missed something, I'm not following it closely, to be perfectly honest with you, but have they said for definitive certainty now that they know that this Buffalo Bills player who was hospitalized, whose heart stopped, have they said for sure, has there been an announcement? Has the team, has the medical team, has anyone said for sure Hamlin's heart stopped because of a hard hit to the chest? Has that been definitively sorted out? If it has, I've missed it. Fast Eddie, do you know of that announcement?
No, I had the statement from the brother yesterday, but I don't know. I don't recall hearing that.
So Dr. Don Lemon this morning has an NHL, I said NHL, a National Hockey League trainer on the show. And here's the caption. NHL trainer who saved two lives after same chest injury joined CNN. Huh? Okay, this was a football player. A football player. I said, hello, is this on? It's a football player. Here now is an NHL trainer. What? Do you know why they didn't have an why they didn't have an NFL trainer to come on to discuss how he saved two lives after a similar hit? Do you know why they didn't?
Because they're two different sports?
Because there's no such injury in football. It's never happened in the sport's history. That's why. Exact same injury. Or entirely different sport. By the way, hockey is a far more violent sport as far as just pure hits than football, if you want to just quantify hitting. As I understand it, I've played neither, but I think hockey people will say and hockey players will confirm that it's some of the most violent hits one will take. But again, maybe that's exactly what it was. Maybe it was a hard freak hit. It's never happened in football ever. But Dr. Lemon now has an NHL expert on to say, oh, yeah, seen this before. Yeah, oh, sure. That's okay. Whatever. All right. That's that. Moving on. Colonel Kurt Schlichter, my great friend, a thrice weekly contributor at Town Hall, author of a fantastic, prolific book of Kelly Turnbull bestsellers, 7 in all, now out, hopefully on your shelves. If not, you should run and scoop them up. He's also a Californian. And as I understand it, I didn't know this until this morning. I've been told, I was a little surprised at this, so I'm ready to hear it. I was told that Kurt Schlichter thinks, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Colonel. Happy New Year and ahoy. You're full steam ahead, green light, let's go, Kevin McCarthy.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. I think of Kevin McCarthy as, you know, on the scale of STDs. He would be more chlamydia, maybe gonorrhea.
As opposed
not
to?
So much, you know, one
as
of
opposed
the
to AIDS?
Where parts fall off.
So he's not full-blown AIDS. He's a rash that
exactly.
We can clear up. I see.
Well,
okay.
I mean, that could be cured. I'm not sure the Republican Party can.
That's quite an endorsement.
I know. It's a powerful one. He's not even herpes. Get on board.
Here's my take. You and tell me where I'm wrong. Where am I wrong-headed here? Okay, you tell me where I'm wrong-headed, Colonel.
Okay.
I say, what the hell? These people literally will accomplish nothing but committee hearings and investigations. So what the hell? Let's just have a good old-fashioned food fight. My head is not on fire. I'm not in a panic. I don't care who the next Speaker of the House is. So let's fight about the direction of this country. We're staring down the barrel of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker, Ronna Romney McDaniel being christened as leader of the RNC again at the end of the month. I'm tired of these people. Let's fight about it. Fine. That's my attitude.
Okay. Well, your basic is it doesn't matter at all. I'm not sure it doesn't matter. And I'm not sure that we're actually fighting about principles. The reason being you have the 20 or so people who really don't want McCarthy, and they have certain demands, which he says he met, which they and that they have suddenly changed. And I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't think it's useful to look chaotic where we're going in. I think it does stop the potentially useful activities, which include oversight. Also, here's the thing. Okay, great. We've got 90% of the caucus wants this dude. Who I don't think much of. Nobody else seems to want the job. What's your plan, 10%? What is the next step where things happen, where we get to success, which makes the House not one half of Congress, where the other half of Congress is controlled by Democrats because the Republicans are incompetent, and the White House is controlled by Democrats also because the Republicans are incompetent? What is the plan going forward? And I don't really see one.
Well, so I think, you know, we had Scott Perry on the show today, one of the 20, mm-hmm. and he said, I'm not a Never Kevin guy. I'm not. He said effectively that his words were, he just doesn't. I mean, I'm sort of putting words in his mouth. I said, can we trust Kevin McCarthy? I don't know the man.
A lot of things in people's mouths lately.
Yeah. But I just said, look, can we trust him? And he said, well, take the word of the guy who used to be his boss and wrote an op-ed about him and said he talks out of both sides of his mouth and you can't trust him. I mean, he said, I'm not going to oppose him, but there are things that he's got to promise or else. I mean, he's got to peel 16 of these people off. He's got to peel 16 of them off, Kurt, and I don't think he's going to do it. So it's
First of all, it's on McCarthy to get this. You know, this is his dream.
Yeah.
Chris, does he has always dreamed of being Speaker. And
which
I'm completely indifferent to whether his dreams die.
Exactly.
I don't particularly like Kevin McCarthy for a number of reasons, some of them very specific. But I'm also completely indifferent to him as a person. If he is a useful tool, then I say use him. If he stops being useful, adios. And he may stop being useful here. Look, if he can't get it done, then eventually he's going to have to step aside, and these guys are going to, we're going to let them win. Wait, well, hold on. I'm not here because there's no giant principle here that these 20 people have to conform.
No, let me ask it this way.
You know, forcing them to obey is not...
I know you understand this. You know politics, so you understand how this works. If you gave all these 220-some House members a truth serum on the Republican side, you inject them with truth serum and say, of everyone in this place, is Kevin the guy you'd like to make Speaker? I think a good half, if not most of them, would say, yeah, probably not. But the reason they all fall in line is because they assume it's baked in the cake he's going to be. And who wants to be crossways with the next Speaker of the House? None of them. So they all have their own asses to consider here when they vote for him. That's what's going on. We all understand that.
That's one reason, potentially.
The only reason.
The reason is, what's the name of the other guy who's remotely capable of doing the job who actually wants to?
I think sometimes they can be compelled to, don't you? I think Jim Jordan could be compelled to. I think Andy Biggs wants to be. I think they could do it, don't you?
Well, look, Andy Biggs, you know, by doing this, has alienated 90% of the caucus. I like Andy Biggs.
I don't accept that they've been alienated. I think, again, I go back to they're scared to not. It's like you don't cross him. Why would you cross him? If he makes it, then you're scared to death. You're going to be punished for not falling in line.
Here's the thing. Nobody's terrified of Kevin McCarthy because he's weak, or at least he's shown himself to be weak. We need a caretaker for 2 years who can basically tell Biden no and organize committees, which then themselves go and do their oversight, because it's one house of one branch of government.
Well, look, Trump just came out today on Truth Social and said, Kevin's my guy. Stick with Kevin. Vote Kevin in. He's the man. And he may. And Trump, with the kind of like your STD thing, Trump says, and he may even be great.
Thanks, Trump. By the way, on Thursday, I just have a brutal article on whether Trump will run third party. And
oh, really? Okay.
Oh, it's pretty mean. I think Trump needs some iron discipline. As I point out, I'm tired of him having being caught in things like having dinner with the cast of Sound of Music and not the Von Trapp ones.
Here's Ron DeSantis at his inauguration yesterday. If you want to hear a little of that, let's listen. Here we go.
We reject this woke ideology. We seek normalcy, not philosophical lunacy. We will not allow reality, facts, and truth to become optional. We will never surrender to the woke mob. Florida is where woke goes to die.
I remind everyone he has still not expressed interest in running for president. Everyone assumes he wants to run for president. He's not yet said so himself, but media is very excited for him to jump in this fracas. They desperately want a Trump-DeSantis fight. Are they going to get it?
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
One. Otherwise, he's going to end up like President Cuomo or President Christie.
Yeah, right. So it's now or never, you think, for him.
But look, you know, it's just your time, and this is his time. He's got a lot of great positions. The thing is, he distinguishes himself from Donald Trump by being, you know, disciplined. You know, he's, you know, I don't see him like lying on his bed on his stomach on, you know, his elbows and kicking his feet with a in his hand, at his ear going, "Hi, Maggie Haberman, what you doing?" You know, he has a lot of the energy of Trump. He has a lot of the positions of Trump. He's also got the discipline that Trump doesn't. I mean, look at the people around Trump right now. Who's running his operation? You know, is it?
When guys
LOL
like
LOL69, is that his like campaign advisor?
Here's the thing. When you lose Bannon and Gorka, who are saying the same thing in critique, I mean, that's like it doesn't get worse for Trump when Bannon and Gorka start piling on.
Well, look, Gorka is a very close friend of mine. He's a personal friend of Donald Trump.
Correct.
And he's personally loyal, and it you know, it's not easy for him saying, "No, your trading cause, your NFTs, that was demeaning and humiliating. Please forego it in the future."
Wah, ah, ah. And then lightning struck, and he started counting bats. Yeah.
Yes. He needs
all right,
his own little wrench
Schlichter.
Kinzinger doesn't have a job.
No.
Maybe he should put in his Gorka resume.
I want to imagine Gorka with a whole basement full of like Bunsen burners and beakers bubbling. Like I picture him in a lab, don't you? Like a sinister science fiction lab. He's just got that Bela Lugosi voice kind of thing. I just dig it. Black and white.
Oh, he's
a menacing figure. Oh, he's amazing. I love him. He's a menacing figure, and in the best possible sense.
There's your anti-Hungarian prejudice coming out again.
I'm a Hungarian bigot. That's right.
I'm a deep-seated.
Okay, you have made a series of predictions for this coming year. I can't wait to bust them open. What is Colonel Kurt Schlichter's predictions for 2023?
I know I have, and I like totally forget all of them. Let's see what's going to happen. Taiwan should be gone. You know, I don't understand Xi. He's got Gumby in the president and the White House. He's got a Navy that's more concerned with making sure that everybody gets their pronouns right than sinking enemy ships. And he doesn't snatch Taiwan. I don't want him to. He's evil. I just don't understand why he doesn't.
You have predicted that there will be other Republicans besides Don and Ron running for president.
That's true. Are you ready for Pompeo mania?
Pompeo.
Are you ready for the amazing excitement that will be Jeb in a skirt, Nikki Haley? And, of course, my favorite, Asa Hutchinson, the guy who sounds like he ought to be driving the chuck wagon on the cattle drive.
Yeah, President
Asa. Where's Jebediah?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to work out. I think, and here's the guy that's going to give me the most heartburn. You ready?
I know this
is going to make people mad at me. I still believe that he is an inherently decent, good man who doesn't stand a chance of winning, and that's Mike Pence.
If Pence wants to win the presidency, he must first invent a time machine to take us back to 2004, when people were walking around going, what the new Republican Party is about, empowerment. And has everyone got their subscription to the Weekly Standard? And Raul the pool boy was kept far in the back.
So you don't see him getting in then?
I think he will because he's delusional.
Yeah. I think most of them are.
Nice guy. I don't think he'd be a terrible president. I think he'd be a terrible president right now because he's the kind of guy who'd go, he's like this Chris Sununu cat. I think we've had too many culture wars, and I think we need to step back and allow the giant corporations to control our lives in conjunction with the academics, the human resource directors, and the saucer people. Look, I mean, it's just, you look at Mike Pence, and he's like the definition of guy who doesn't know what time it is.
Do you know what amazes me most? I've been back now a couple of days. We've been kind of reviewing the news that ended the year and started this new year. And what is really, truly kind of remarkable, do you know who's almost completely missing from the conversation? Is the guy that we're all pretending is running the country. I've not even uttered his name. And I'm serious. I haven't even said, I've barely said the man's name.
Yeah, Grandpa Badfinger, wasn't he like, didn't he leave a giant cold front blizzard thing to go party and frolic in the tropics?
Which, I think that's
until
right.
The day before he did that was like the worst possible thing you could ever do.
Uh-huh. But isn't that remarkable? This is supposedly the president of the United States, and I literally don't think about him. As a talk show host or as just a citizen, I'm not even thinking about the man.
That's because he's a senile old pervert whose incompetence is only matched by his unbelievable arrogance.
Yes.
He's Millard Fillmore without the edge.
I think he's a little more fit than Millard Fillmore, if memory serves. Anyway.
So, was he a fat one? I know Taft was fat.
I thought Fillmore was kind of husky. I thought he would be, he'd shop in the husky dungaree department.
Maybe he was big boned.
Who was the one? One of them fell through the floor of the White House in a tub or something, if memory serves.
I don't know.
Or got stuck in the tub. No, you know what it was? The Truman White House, this is true. I think if a tub fell through the floor, because Truman spent a bunch of money rehabbing the White House, a tub fell through the floor of the White House while Truman was president, but I think it was Taft that got stuck in a tub. I think that's true.
By the way, speaking of giant fat people, Hollywood is now, if you look, Hollywood has one movie out, it's Avatar Way of Blue Cartoon,
yes,
which I'm not going to see. But there are other films out, apparently, including one with Brendan Fraser as a 600-pound LGBTQ exclamation point pound symbol, hashtag,
ampersand.
Yeah, ampersand. Atheist college professor who's 600, like I said, 600 pounds. It's called The Whale. And besides a other movie that's out called Women Talking, I'm trying to figure out what Hollywood's doing. That's another of my projections. What the hell is Hollywood doing?
I'd just like to say that this conversation, in classic Colonel Kurt Schlichter fashion, began with Kevin McCarthy is like a minor STD, and closed with, speaking of fat people. Happy New Year, ladies and gentlemen. Happy New Year. That's Colonel Kurt Schlichter. Great talking with you, Colonel. Ahoy, my man.
Ahoy. Don't go watch movies about fat people.
610-850-0990, the number. 610-850. Now, that's the kind of excellence you've come to expect from shows like this, Fast Eddie, I think. If that analysis doesn't excite you, then nothing's going to.
I don't know where else you get this, man.
Where do you top it? You can't. That's just Wednesday. That's just midweek.
We are Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle.
Kenwood. I spent many years of my professional life there on City Ave in Bala Kenwood. Scott lives there in Bala Kenwood. He was caller number 9. He's on his way. That's just a hop, skip, and a jump over there to Broomall for Scott, so that's not going to be too bad a ride at all. Congratulations. He was caller number 9. Scott, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you, and congratulations on the win. Telephone number again, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Now, tomorrow on the show, Andy Biggs. Andy Biggs is the Arizona congressman. He's the chair of the House Freedom Caucus. He was one of the names floated by the opposition, these 20 people who have said no to Kevin McCarthy. Biggs is one of the guys whose names was floated out there, Jim Jordan being the other. We're going to talk with Biggs, and I'm going to ask him about this notion of there's nobody else. You heard Kurt say, who's the alternative? Nobody else wants the job. And I said, well, I think Biggs is one of those guys. So does Biggs want it? And, you know, it's one of those things like if it's Jim Jordan, for instance, Jim Jordan gives this big endorsement speech of McCarthy yesterday on the House floor. And then Gates comes right up and says, you know what? I love Jim. I think Jim should have the job. So I got to ask Biggs from his perspective. I mean, is this one of those things where, what, all these, you know, 218 Republicans then have to throw their support behind Jordan or him? And then if that happens, they happily stand in and serve? Like, I don't really understand the process. So my point is, this is not just a food fight for food fight's sake. This is an important fight. This is a definitional fight. Let's have it. We'll see you tomorrow.
990 The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.